session number 21660, Reel 4.
Jack Locke, Reel 4. You were just saying, Jack, that you didn't return to B Echelon.
Not the troops didn't. We used to... The B Echelon was where all the colour sergeants were to supply the forward troops. From there on, we moved up to them and then moved behind them all the way up.
And how many vehicles would you have to do your... Would you just have the one vehicle for yourself?
Yeah, one vehicle for each colour sergeant.
And would that be for the company, or would you have other vehicles to move other stores up?
Yes, we did have other vehicles, which would obviously move the stores up. But the colour sergeant's vehicles were basically loaded with cooking utensils and rations and that sort of thing. They couldn't be carried on anything else but motor vehicles. So we had all our stores on one vehicle each and a driver.
You mentioned the problem of navigating along in the desert at night.
Yes.
Was it a problem to move around in the desert?
It was a problem to move around in the desert at any time. Especially if you hadn't got a map or you weren't very good at map reading. And because you had minefields to sort of move away from or find the way through a minefield. Mainly if you went through a minefield, there was a sort of a track to take you through. But if anything was going to happen around that minefield, then that track would obviously be removed.
And what was the type of, say, around the Bear Ridge area, what was the type of feature that the desert looked, what did it look like? Was it featureless, or was it sandy, or was it rocky?
It was sandy. It was rocky. There was sand that you just couldn't go through. It was a sink. Some places it was easy to dig in. Some places it wasn't. You had to get machines up to break through the rock. And then the sands of the desert used to grow cold too, at night, very cold.
When you were moving the stores up, did you ever get bogged down in the sand?
No, fortunately no, we didn't. No.
Would you have had equipment to get you out of that thing?
Well, we used to have, on board, we used to have the long sort of, what do you call them?
Like a sand rail?
Long sand, yeah. You know, you used to be able to get it under the vehicle to get them out.
And at that time, did you ever come under attack from German aircraft at all in when you were in B Echelon?
Yes, I have been. And I can always remember one in particular. I think we were in the middle of the desert and in B Echelon, and I can remember one of my blokes, he went out into the desert to do his stuff, and he was sitting there and aircraft come over and they circled us, and that bloke, poor chap, he was all right in the end, but he didn't know what to do. So I sort of ran out towards him and told him to take cover. He was still sitting, and the aircraft were just going to bomb us. And he was just still sitting, and he didn't know what to do. So I told him, get up and run. Run around. Don't break a target. And he got away with it in the end. But bit dicey when you're a sitting target, really.
Had the aircraft spotted him?
No, I don't think they'd spotted him, but they'd spotted where we were, and they were circling to, obviously to bomb us. They did in the end, but nobody got hurt.
Was the effect quite different from the bombing you'd experienced at Dunkirk? Or was it of a similar sort of nature in the desert?
It was, because... what do you think? I can't remember. There's a lot of dive bombing in the desert. And that's a bit different to being machine gunned. And they used to, what they call them, supers. Super dive bombers, they were very prevalent out there. Horrible things. Make a horrible noise when they came down. Bombs were screaming.
Would you dig yourself any slit trenches as protection?
We used to have to do that, yes. If we were stationary anywhere for any length of time, then we used to have to dig in.
How would you camouflage your vehicles?
We had nets. Nets with camouflage attached that covered the vehicles.
Was that adequate?
Oh, yes. It worked. I don't know whether how difficult it was or whether you could see the very plain from the air, I don't know. But I think they did work.
Because I was just wondering, obviously you was attacked by the Germans. Would the aircraft, the German and Italian aircraft, would they circle and try and find targets? Was it opportunity?
Oh, they used to come out with spotter planes, yeah. See if they could find spot targets.
Would you take any precautions when you saw a spotter plane?
Not immediately, no, because it had been a waste of time, but we didn't usually stay all that long anyway.
So at that period, you were living in the desert and you'd got acclimatised to it. How would you cook your meals?
Well, we used to have a cooker operated by petrol. And there were high-pressure burners, and the flames used to spread out under the Dixies that we used to use to cook the meals in. And if you were cooking on your own, then you could just use all sorts of things. One thing we used to use was, say, a biscuit tin about four feet high, fill it with sand, holes in it, put some petrol in it, and burn it. And, you know, do a cup of tea on that, boil the water. But that's if you were on your own without the troops there. And other than that, we used to use these cookers.
And what was the variety of meals like? Would there be a different meal every day?
No. I mean, bully beef was not the favourite, but it was one of yours. But what you did occasionally get the odd chicken or some meat up. It just depends what the situation was. We weren't distinctly having bully beef and biscuits, but it was used a lot.
Did you ever get any kind of luxury items up on occasion?
Think about that one. We used to get luxury items, which were basically American rations. And they were tins of treacle puddings and that sort of thing. But not very often. But yes, we did get a change now and again. I mean, we used to make all sorts of things. You take biscuits. If you had a load of those left, we used to make what we used to call a biscuit burgoo. And that was made with tin milk and the biscuits, hardtack biscuits, with a bit of jam in or something like that. We used to try and do things for them. A bit difficult at times, of course.
What was the company's reaction to the rations?
I didn't have any real bother. No, I didn't have any real bother. I mean, when they were ready for their food, they were hungry anyway. And sometimes I had to wait for it, obviously.
And would you supply them with cigarettes?
Yes. They used to get a ration of cigarettes every week. And in the main, there was Victory V's, they used to call some, I think. And some were called VALS, V-A-L-S, VALS cigarettes. But then eventually we did get the reasonable, like Players, Capstan, they used to get a ration every week. And then Marion used to send me a lot of cigarettes by the post.
Were you a smoker?
Oh yeah, no, I was a smoker, yes. Not too heavy, but yes, I used to smoke. But I haven't smoked for about 25 years now. But, she used to send me out cigarettes. Every week she sent cigarettes. Didn't get them all, of course. Didn't all get there.
Why was that?
Lost in the post. But when they did arrive, and I used to get more than most, I think. And I was a very popular bloke. When the cigarettes came up.
Would you say that most of the battalion smoked?
Yes, yes, yeah. Yes, I would say that.
Would it be an odd an odd person who didn't really smoke? Would it be unusual if somebody didn't smoke?
I think so, yes, because it was something to, you know, smoking, take things off your mind and what does people smoke for now, is it?
Would you do it in a way that you would stop and have a cigarette, or you'd offer a cigarette as a social sort of thing amongst everybody?
Oh, yeah.
And you were very popular for having a little life. What about water? Where did the water supply come from?
There used to be... Water would be supplied at a base depot or something like that. And the battalion had a water cart, about the size of a 1500 weight vehicle. And that was replenished, it had taps on it, so you could either get containers or even down to a water bottle underneath it to get the water. But we were often supplied by air with water. Some places water was short, and we often had water, especially in Burma, supplied by air.
Were you supplied by water in the desert, by air?
Yes, I think we were, yes.
And with that, would you have any control over the water supply to the company, or would individuals get it from the water cart?
The water cart used to supply, if possible, to the company in general, not to an individual, but put it into containers that would be controlled by either the colour sergeant or the company sergeant major or something like that.
Was there a problem with water rationing in the desert? Do you have to be careful with how much water you used?
I don't think we had a lot of water rationing in the desert. It was sort of an area that it could be flown to, and when it was to be dropped, it would be dropped conveniently. I can't remember being very short of water. It all depends what you were doing. You could get short of water if they had made an attack and were bogged down, but then they'd always have the water bottle with them.
What about shaving or washing?
Well, we used to have enough for that. Well, that had to be done. Except where we'd come on to Kohima, and then that was different time altogether.
What about in the desert? Was there any, you know, hygiene problems with obviously the amount of sand that was around, or do dust, would you suffer from sores or?
Desert sores, yes, definitely. And one had to be very careful. Flies were a nuisance in the desert. You could get desert sores very easily.
What would they? What would they look like? A desert sore, wouldn't it?
Very sore looking.
Does it? Would it be? Would it be a weeping sore? Or is
yes.
It,
yeah.
And is there a problem with them healing?
I eat that. I might get mixed up here. Jungle sores. I had jungle sores. I had one
on your wrist.
There, see it?
Yep.
And that just ate into my wrist. And we're going away from the desert now, of course. And there was a Chinese doctor came to our unit once, and he came up with me one day to the front. And he said, "What's wrong with your wrist?" And I showed it to him. He said, "Well, when we get back, I'll deal with that." And the stuff he used was called sulfur elimoid. It was in tablet form, but he mashed it all down, mixed it with water, and rammed it in there. And I think within a week it had gone. So that's how they did the jungle sores. They were bad.
Were the desert sores a different type of sore?
If I remember correctly, they didn't go deep.
So they were more abrasive, yeah, were they, on the surface? You said there's a problem with flies. Did you try and keep flies off the food?
Well, flies and what we used to call shite hawks, birds, and they swoop down. And we used to try, and when food was issued, we used to try and cover them to obviate the birds coming down and keep the flies off. But it all depends where you were. Where we found most trouble with flies was in the Italian positions. And they were pretty filthy.
So you would say that there were different areas within the desert that would,
oh yeah,
there'd be more attractions of flies and other things?
Yeah.
And that would that be really then depending on the hygiene of the troops who've been there?
A lot, yes.
What about your own hygiene? I mean, you mentioned the soldier who'd gone out into the desert to do the necessary, yeah, business. Was there a procedure for that? Obviously, if you were, say, in a set position, or would, yeah, people just...
Yes, if we were in a set position and weren't sort of in view of the enemy, etc., every company had a bloke that was responsible for digging the trains and that sort of thing and putting something around them. Yes, we used to do that. But if not, it had to be buried.
And that was important, obviously, within the British Army,
yeah,
to do that yes, sort of thing. Because I was wondering with that, would you generally, say you pulled out of a position, would you tidy your position as well of rubbish or material left around?
We would try to, yes. It was obvious. As far as we could, we used to make it tidy, and anything that had to be moved was moved or dug in.
At that point, you said you'd moved up. Obviously, you'd had a period of acclimatisation, and that Berridge was the first action. What were the casualties like at the Berridge action?
Berridge, we lost quite a few blokes there.
What about within B Company?
I think there's about 80 or 90 blokes in there. Quite a lot.
And what was the actual action they were involved in? Were they attacking German and Italian positions?
We were attacking the Germans. But they, for some unknown reason, knew we were coming. Because they were spotted And I think what it was that sometimes when you attacked, you had to lay tapes for various companies and other battalions to go into and to attack in. And I think with Bear Ridge, they saw that being done. And I think I'm right that when they attacked, when our blokes attacked, the Germans were already waiting for them, and they had their machine guns on fixed line, and they were firing knee high.
What type of terrain did they attack across?
It was quite flat.
So that was a heavy number of casualties.
Yeah.
What happened immediately after the action? Did the companies return to their positions, or
they would retreat or return to an area that would have been from a map that would have been advised by the commanding officer to retreat or to go forward to that particular point. Very difficult in the desert because there was nothing out there to retreat to or to go to, just desert.
And when the casualties had been caused, what would initially happen, say with B Company's casualties? Would the replacements be ready right away? Or
no,
would it be
it'd be some time to get them up to you.
Would that mean there'd be more rations to go around once?
Well, I suppose it could do, but I don't think if you lost both, I don't think it would affect the troops themselves. They would get their rations. It might be a little bit left over.
One thing I neglected to ask when we were talking about rations earlier on was there ever alcohol available to the troops?
Yes. I was allowed, which I had to pay for, of course, a bottle of whiskey and a bottle of gin per month. The troops could get the odd can of beer or something like that, but they couldn't get, spirits. But I could. Which was not quite, was most unfair perhaps. But I used to use it as medicine. I used to take a tot of whiskey, or if I could have it with me, a tot of whiskey or a drop of gin every night. Never failed. And that, in my opinion, kept off malaria. Because I'd never had malaria until I got home.
Was there a problem with malaria in the desert?
No.
Was that we're talking about Burma there? Mm. I know, because I only know there is sometimes a problem with malaria in the delta, isn't there, of Egypt? But
well, I don't think we run into the mosquito here in the desert. But it was the flies that was the trouble, mainly the trouble.
The action at Bear Ridge. Once this was the first action. What happened after, obviously, the end of the action? What happened with the battalion?
We actually I think there we joined for a short period of time some New Zealanders and helped make them up until our I'm not too sure of that, but I think it happened that way. Because things happen that you don't hear of anyway, that when you're not concerned, say one rifle company has to go somewhere else, your own company don't hear of it until something happens by way of action. And then you know where they are.
So you part of the battalion joined the New Zealanders, obviously.
Yeah.
And then what happened then?
That was really the start of when when the Enola Maine came on. When Rommel and his battalion, his company, and or the army rather, he started to go downhill a bit there, didn't he? And Enola Maine was the final battle, one of the main battles of the defeat of Rommel and the Africa Corps.
What was the battalion doing during Enola Maine?
We just we were back as a battalion and moving up as the battle went on.
So you didn't have a frontline assault position, but you were follow up.
We followed on. Yeah.
How did you move the whole battalion in the desert then? How was there?
We either had to march, or it was in the area where you could take a vehicle. Eventually, that's the way we used to move around. But mainly, it's walking.
Would you walk, or would you be?
No, I'd take a vehicle.
How far could the troops march in the desert in a day?
Oh, that's tough to say. It all depends whether it was a forced march or whether it was a...
Would they be able to cover, say, the same distances as they would be able to cover in England, or would it be less?
The heat, for one thing, could shorten the distance. Whether the sand was deep, or whether it was easier to walk on than deep sand, or if it was rocky, you'd have to go around it. Because some of the rocks, when you couldn't march on that, and some of the dunes, of course, were almost impassable, and you had to find your way around that. I would say no more than 15. That's a bit of a guess too.
And as you were moving up after El Alamein, did you see many German or Italian prisoners?
Oh yes, at one stage there were hundreds of them. When he, you know, finally gave away.
Did you feel in El Alamein, when you started to see these prisoners, that this might have been a change in the desert war?
Well, it was a change in the desert war, really. Because from then on, they sort of pushed them back, didn't they? Rommel was sent back to Germany and whatnot. And yes, I think that was a change.